Side Hustle Show 305, finding the buy button inside your customers' heads. This is how to combine ancient neuroscience, brain science, and modern marketing to ethically make more sales. What's up, Nick Loper here. Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, because nothing happens until somebody sells something. And whether we like it or not, we're all in sales. In this episode, you'll learn how to ethically hack the minds of your customers and prospects to persuade them to take action. And how we're going to do that is by triggering a response in their primal or reptilian brain. So I'm joined today by neuromarketing specialist Patrick Renvoicy from salesbrain.com. He's the author of the new book, The Persuasion Code, and his TEDx talk has more than 140,000 views. So Patrick argues that we basically have two systems competing in our head. First is our 500 million year old primal brain, and then our more modern, more rational brain. And however Spock-like or rational we think we are, it's that ancient, self-centered, emotional, visual brain that really drives decision-making. Stick around in this episode to learn how, as entrepreneurs, marketers, and side hustlers, how we can tap into that ancient buy button to be more persuasive, to more clearly explain our value proposition, and ultimately to make more sales and grow our business. Patrick is going to share the 6 stimuli of the reptilian brain you need to be aware of, and then his pain, claim, gain framework for crafting effective emails, pitches, sales copy, etc. Notes and links for this one, plus a free PDF highlight reel with all of Patrick's top tips from the call, are at sidehustlenation.com/Patrick, or you can check the episode description in your podcast player app. Now, you're about to get a crash course in neuromarketing in this episode, and if you're ready to step up your skills there or in other areas of your business, I encourage you to check out our sponsor, Skillshare.com. Skillshare is the online, on-demand learning community that now has more than 20,000 classes in marketing, sales, social media, and tons more, all taught by industry experts and insiders. Now, I recommend you practice just-in-time learning by picking the ones that are going to make the greatest impact on your bottom line. You can visit skillshare.com/sidehustle for 2 months of unlimited access for just 99 cents. Once again, that deal for Side Hustle Show listeners is at skillshare.com/sidehustle. This edition of the Side Hustle Show is also brought to you by FreshBooks.com. So I rely on FreshBooks when I need to send an invoice to clients or advertisers, and I know I'm just scratching the surface of what the award-winning cloud accounting software can do, but know this, more than 10 million customers trust FreshBooks to help keep their admin and paperwork in check, and 97% of small business owners, myself included, would recommend it to a friend. Visit FreshBooks.com/sidehustle to start your 30-day completely free trial today, with no credit card required. That's freshbooks.com/sidehustle and enter the Side Hustle Show in the How Did You Hear About Us section. I'll be back with my top takeaways from the chat with Patrick after the interview. We kick this thing off with learning the only 6 stimuli that matter to the primal brain. Ready? Let's do it.
So there are only 6 ways you can trigger those primal brain. The first one is it's a brain that is very personal. In other words, it's a brain that's only concerned about its own survival. And it's a brain that's always constantly looking at saving energy. Why? Because when you get depleted of your own energy, you jeopardize your survival.
So this is, as a marketer, not talking about, well, my product is so great, my service is so great. It's more what it does for you. That's how you're structuring your language there?
Yes, exactly. In fact, we go even one step further. When people are writing about their products, do they use the word we? Or do they use the word you as you, the prospect? In fact, if you look at most websites, you know, most websites are focused on talking about who we are and what we do. Well, guess what? The customer does not care because by definition, he or she is selfish. So how can you translate everything you write in the we language and how do you rewrite it in the you language? And when you do that, the brain of your audience starts to get engaged. In fact, you know, the two words that trigger the biggest reaction from an audience is either the name of the person you're talking to or the word you. And doing that translation from the we language to the you language is the first step towards triggering that first stimulus.
So if you have a call to action on your site, you know, if you're a blog and it's download my lead magnet, it's like send me the free copy. So you're using the word me or get your free copy or something like that, or book your free consulting session or something.
Yeah. Or you can get a free copy if you do this and that.
Okay.
Or just if you create a title, the title would be your free copy.
Okay.
It's a very interesting exercise, by the way, when you do this. And typically when you count the number of we versus you, depending on how self-centered the writer is, it's a good diagnostic of his own egocentric nature. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of falls in with the building a story brand framework that I've been working through this summer, where you're positioning your brand, your product, your service as the guide in your journey. And your customer is the hero. They're the self-centered. They want to be the movie star in the story. So we've got the personal selfish stimuli. What are the other ones?
Let me talk just about contrast and make a business link right away.
Okay.
Most websites start with the sentence, we are one of the leading provider of. By the way, it starts with the word we, but beyond that, you're also saying we are a leading provider of. Well, guess what your competitors are typically saying? Your competitors are saying the same thing. So from the viewpoint of your customers, they do not see enough contrast between you and all the other options that they have that they can choose from. So you have to increase that contrast to the point where you have to be able to write, we are the only provider of, and you need to finish that sentence, which of course is not easy if you're selling a commodity, but you have to create that differentiation at all costs. Otherwise, if you have one competitor, you immediately divide your probability to sell by 50%. So that's the second stimulus of contrast.
Okay, coming up with what can you be the only of? So I don't know why I always think of this example, but it's like ex officio underwear. People have been selling underwear for hundreds of years, but like we are the first and only like travel underwear or something, like a very specialized sub-niche.
Correct. So there are many different ways you can do it. You can either subdivide the current market and only focus on one sub-share of that market and be the only one with possibly a very not that important feature, but that not that important feature, now you're going to make it the main point of why people should buy from you. I'll give you an example. You know, years ago, Subaru came out as a car manufacturer. And for a long, long time, they only were selling one thing, which was they were the only car manufacturer that was only making four-wheel drives. That's what made them completely unique. If you're talking about Volvo, for example, the unique characteristics of Volvo is safety. In fact, if you ask most people, you know, why would people want to buy a Volvo? They will take you because they offer the safest car. So it's not like Volvo is just selling you a regular car or even a safe car. They are selling you the safest car. And that's just to trigger that concept of contrast. So the third stimulus is tangible. Remember that primal brain is a brain that is very old. And back then, word did not exist. And people do not understand when you say, we offer the end user with a flexible, scalable, modular architecture that will provide them with, no, the primal brain doesn't understand any of that because it is not tangible enough. Instead, you know, the primal brain understands such thing like yellow banana. Why? Because yellow banana is necessary for survival. It's one of the stimulus that is needed for survival. It's food, right? So being able to simplify your value proposition to get to what is it in simple terms that even a four-year-old would understand, the nature of why people should buy from you is critical. You have to make it so tangible that people would not question either the value that you provide or the proof that you're using. And I can give you a very simple example. When you're thinking about Domino's Pizza, their slogan for the longest period of time was 30 minutes or less, or it's free. And the fact that they added the word or it's free in their slogan gives people a tangible proof about what they commit to. So they were able not just simply to talk about the fact that your pizza will arrive quickly, but they gave you a tangible proof that they will deliver on their promise. So whatever it is you're communicating to the primal brain, you need to make it ultra simple. Again, the primal brain is the equivalent of a 3 to 4 year old in terms of pure intelligence. So you got to make your value proposition simple. You got to make it visual. You got to make it proven, and you got to make the whole thing really tangible. In other words, you know, people almost need to be able to touch or smell your value proposition, regardless about what it is that you're selling.
Okay, so one way to do that is that kind of or else or guarantee. Any other examples aside from the Domino's one?
Well, yeah, it goes deeper than that. You know, one way to make your value proposition is to use a story. Why? Well, stories have a very specific impact on the reptilian brain because people get involved in stories. In other words, you know, people go to see a movie and that makes them cry. Now, everybody, when we see a movie and we cry, we know the movie is not real. We know the hero is not going to die. But when the story is properly told, it creates a multisensory environment around the story, which makes our reptilian brain believe that the story is real. In fact, most of the time, our reptilian brain puts itself in the shoes of the actual hero in the story. And as a result, we get all the physiological response that we would get if we were living that story in real. So that's the power of story. So a story becomes a very tangible way of expressing your value proposition. So the fourth stimulus is visual. We just started to talk about it, right? The reptilian brain or the primal brain does not understand words, but it understands pictures. You know, about 90 to 95% of all brain activities is about processing images. The optic nerve is much faster than the auditory nerve. Most people that were not blind at birth, whenever you ask them a question, they process that question in the visual mode. So there is a huge amount of scientific proof that primal brain is primarily visual. The next stimulus is beginning and end. And here is what beginning and end means.
So let's pause on visual for a second. So this is primarily a podcast show. It's primarily audio. In fact, it's entirely audio. But what do you do if people don't have an opportunity to make visual contact?
Well, then you tell stories. And here is why. Because if I tell you a story, and if in the story I tell you, and oh, by the way, the sun was rising over the mountain, when I say the sun was rising over the mountain, I am painting a picture in the brain of my audience. And the audience is processing that concept of the sun rising over a mountain in a visual mode, no longer with words. Does that make sense?
All right.
So again, as you pointed out, we're doing a podcast, so it's only an auditory stimulus. However, again, if I'm starting to tell you a story of a lemon and I paint the picture of that lemon well enough, then people will engage other modalities in their brain that are not linked to the auditory modality. When you look at the primal brain, that primal brain is primarily a visual learner because the visual channel, the eye, apparently appeared in evolution before we started to develop the sense of hearing. So because of that, you have to really force yourself to use visuals when you communicate with people because it eases, it speeds up the time that it takes for them to understand your concepts. That's why, again, when you can communicate your value prop in one visual, that visual being you or your prospect on the left-hand side without your solution, then on the same image, your prospect with your solution, this is the fastest way for people to learn these concepts. So that is indeed the fourth stimulus of visual.
Okay. Work on my storytelling for the show.
Yep. The next stimulus is beginning and end. Beginning and end, here is what that means. If Homo sapiens was a rational decision-making machine, we would typically remember things in a linear manner. In other words, if I was going to leave you a list of 10 words, statistically speaking, people should remember those words the same way, and it should be somewhat linear. But in reality, we are not linear in what we remember. And there is one of 88 cognitive biases. So these cognitive biases are, again, the 180 rules of how we make irrational decisions or how we do not remember things linearly. And two of those cognitive biases are called the recency primacy effect. And what that means is people remember things at the beginning of an interaction. They will remember things at the end of an interaction, but they will forget pretty much everything in between. So it has an application. For example, if you do a movie, you know, George Lucas said the secret to making a good movie is create a hot opening, create a hot close, and just don't screw up in the middle. Anybody who remembers Saving Private Ryan, you will remember that the opening scene is extremely intense with the American troops landing in Normandy and, you know, bullets flying everywhere. The last scene is also super intense with the tank scene. But in the middle, you know, the movie is not that intense. However, most people remember Saving Private Ryan as a super emotionally charged movie. So what does that mean for the marketeer? That means if you do a brochure of 3 pages, the first line or the first picture of the page of that brochure and the last line that you write and the last picture on your brochure are more important than what you put in the middle, because to save energy, people tend to disconnect their attention in the middle of an interaction. So they tend to forget everything in between, you know, in the middle. So that also means that if your sales process has 10 steps or 10 interactions with your customer, they will remember the first time you met them. They remember the last time you met them, but your third visit, they will completely forget it when it's time for them to decide.
Okay. So if you're writing an email, it really hammers home the importance of that subject line, opening line, and then what's your ask? What's the call to action at the end?
Exactly. And in an email, you make things even worse because by definition, in the subject line, you only have a limited number of letters or words. You cannot even use different fonts. You cannot use any color. So you cannot contrast, right? I mean, one way to use contrast quickly and effectively is to use color in text or to highlight things. Well, when you write a subject line in an email, none of that. So if you want to grab the attention of your audience with an email, you really need to pay a lot of attention to that subject line, right? And that's, again, the effect of that fifth stimulus, which is beginning and end. Again, in the world of psychology, it is referred to as the recency primacy effect.
And what's number six?
So number six is emotional. The rational brain deals with mathematics and all the hardcore science and all the logical arguments, etc. But by definition, that will not reach the primal brain because the primal brain applies a filter of emotion before it will decide if it should put any attention to it. Why? Because fundamentally, emotion comes from the Latin words movere, which means to move. So an emotion is emotion. In other words, an emotion is what precedes our motion to decide to do something. So if that stimulus, for example, is a snake, if you see a snake, you see the snake, your brain analyzes, oh, it recognizes it's a snake, goes into a database of known dangers, the snakes fall into that. That triggers the emotion of fear, and that emotion of fear will instantly make you move away from the snake. However, now if you see an apple, you know, a nice juicy apple, the emotion that you experience after seeing the apple is an emotion of desire, and that emotion will draw you towards the apple. So all the marketing activities that are created, their purpose is to create that positive movement of the consumer or the buyer towards the product.
Yeah, move people toward the product, but it could be away from some other less desirable state. Like you can use fear as an emotion in your ad in moderation.
Yes, you can, to the degree that it is clear that your product will produce the antithesis of that fear.
Right. Yeah, you see that people using scarcity claims saying, okay, offer ends at midnight, that type of stuff. It's kind of an emotional appeal to the fear of missing out.
That's correct. And those can be very effective. But again, it's only simply because it is implied that if they do what you're suggesting, they will not experience that initial fear that you were using as a stimulus, right? You know, again, the key is that people do not decide on rational. People decide on emotional. And then we rationalize later all the emotional decisions that we made. In other words, I did not mention it, but that primal brain is also the brain of the unconscious. And that unconscious helps us make decision even before we know we have made the decision. And then we will take a number of, you know, computing cycles before we reach that conclusion. But the key thing is that we make emotional decisions and then we rationalize them, not vice versa.
Yeah, I've definitely heard that before. We'll justify it to ourselves after the fact.
No, you can read a very good book by a guy called Antonio Damasio. Damasio is head of the neuroscience department at USC, and he demonstrated what I just said. You know, he demonstrated that we are emotional people that make irrational decisions.
Okay. So those were the six stimuli to kind of tap into the primal brain. They were personal, contrast, tangible, visual, beginning and end, that recency and primacy thing, and then emotional. Patrick's got a cool way to kind of remember this as you're crafting your offer, crafting your marketing. And that's pain, claim, gain, and then appeal to the primal brain. So pain, claim, gain, brain. And the first element of that is this pain. Like, where does it hurt? We've heard about selling vitamins versus selling aspirin. And so your argument is it's much easier to sell aspirin.
My argument is articulated slightly differently than this, but it's kind of the same idea. So let me explain. The concept of pain is this. The best way to explain it is to give you an example. So What do you think is the number one pain of people who buy home delivered pizza? Now, most people think that if they are in the home delivery pizza business, they are indeed in the tomato sauce crust and pepperoni business. And that's a conscious process, if you want. In other words, if you ask people consciously, what do they want or what do they need when they want to buy a home delivered pizza, people will tell you, I want extra pepperoni and I want the pizza to arrive in the next 5 seconds. And I don't want to pay more than $5 for an extra size pizza. But when you dig deeper inside their psyche, that pain or the unconscious driver that pushes people to buy home delivery pizza has in reality nothing to do with the pizza. And, you know, 35 years ago, there was a small pizza shop in the area of Detroit who figured out that the pain of people who buy home delivery pizza is the anxiety of not knowing when the pizza will arrive. And you know what their slogan was? They chose 30 minutes or less, or it's free. And that little pizza shop is, of course, as recognized now, is called Domino's Pizza, and they became number one in the business. But what's the moral of my story? Well, the moral of my story is, if you are selling home delivered pizza, you should not think of your business as being in the pizza delivery. You should think of your organization as a FedEx organization, which happened to sell pizza. In other words, the pizza is just an accessory to the business. And if you focus on that real pain, and if, as Domino did, you build a whole organization whose only purpose is to eliminate that pain, then you're on to something. So the concept of pain is to say, when people tell you, I want something, in reality, very often, their pain has nothing to do with it. And the smart marketeers will dig inside their unconscious or their primal brain to figure out what drives the behavior of those buyers when they want a particular product. So what's really important here is to understand the difference between what your customers want and what their pains are, because the pain is much more the realm of the unconscious or the primal brain. So our first step is really the concept of, what do you do to diagnose that pain? And you need to dig deeper inside the psyche of your buyers to go past the wish, the wants, or the needs, and to really land on those pains, because those pains drive our behavior even more predictably than what we want or what we need. In fact, if you think of the human psyche as an iceberg, the very bottom of the iceberg is fear. In other words, neuroscientists have proven that, although we will never recognize it, but that all our decisions we make are based on fear. And at the end of the day, you know, the number one fear is it's the fear of not being able to survive. So again, that's the first step. Diagnose the pain, and people need to do that because the primal brain is highly personal. It's highly selfish. It's only centered on its own survival.
Yeah, that's really powerful stuff and interesting stuff, because what you think you're selling may not be the actual thing. Like, if you're just doing it based on needs or based on a commodity basis, you're saying to dig a layer past that, or even several layers past that, to figure out, okay, what is the true benefit to my customer? What's that transformation that people are going to get from buying my product? And how can I showcase that kind of before and after picture?
Yes, that's the first step of diagnose the pain. The second step is differentiate your claims. And you need to do that because that reptilian brain is sensitive to contrast. Now, again, in the case of Domino's, there is nothing really unique about their pizza. But they found that claim not in the product itself, because by definition, it's a commodity. They found their claim in the delivery of the product. In the case of Starbucks, they don't express it that clearly. But think about it. There is nothing really unique about Starbucks coffee. You know, in fact, many other brands of coffee are much better than Starbucks. However, they found the differentiation is in offering that transition. So everything they do at the Starbucks location is to create that environment where they provide a smooth transitioning between your home and your office. So unfortunately, not that many companies or people make the effort to look at coming up with something really unique about what they do. But you need to do this if you want to increase your probability to sell more. And again, you need to do that because of that notion of contrast, because the brain filters everything when it's not in a different color.
Right. Yeah. You don't necessarily need to compete on price. You don't necessarily need to compete like Domino's on delivery speed, but you need to compete on something. You figure out how to differentiate.
Yes. You need to differentiate at all costs. Then the third step in our process is you need to demonstrate the gain. So again, the first steps are diagnose the pain, then differentiate your claims, and then demonstrate the gain. Now, why do you need to demonstrate the gain? Because by definition, people are skeptical, because your customers are expecting a tangible proof of your value. And that's why Domino didn't stop at saying 30 minutes or less. They added, or it's free. So that or it's free becomes a proof of what you can expect if you go with them. So that concept of gain is, you know, a synonym for value proposition, except that we define gain as the difference between the value and the cost. So the faster, the easier your customers can understand that the value that you bring to the table exceeds your cost, the faster they will be willing to buy from you. So value actually has three components. There is a financial aspect typically to, you know, people buying something. There is a strategic aspect, and then there is a personal aspect. So your job is to maximize not only the financial value, but also the strategic and personal value. So I'll give you an example. Most people would agree that there is nothing really unique about an iPhone. In fact, you know, Samsung phones are equally good. However, if you think about the value prop of Apple today, it's really around the notion of cool to use. You know, early on in the history of Apple, which is about 35 years old, early on, the reason why people would buy a Macintosh with Apple was because it was easy to use. But rapidly, other computers became easy. So Apple changed its claim from easy to use to cool to use. So today, think about how Apple is trying to develop all these nice functions and features and really cool packaging, etc. So that in reality, the reason why people buy an iPhone today is not because it's a better phone. It's because it becomes a piece of jewelry. And it's cooler to use an iPhone than it is to use a Samsung phone. So again, the claim of Apple is cool to use. And the value prop is if you buy the latest iPhone, you will be cooler than your friends who don't have it.
How about if you're operating like on a much smaller scale than Apple? Say, like, I just want people to read my travel blog.
So you need to quickly demonstrate why your travel blog is valuable. You have to ask yourself this first question. What is the value that I bring to the table? So if I have a travel blog, how will people be able to save money by reading my blog? So not only do you need to make that tangible, in other words, can you even quantify? So for example, I would do a survey and I would send 100 of my readers a question and I would ask them, as a result of reading my blog, how much do you estimate you are able to save over the last 12 months in travel expenses? And then when I get the response from them, then I am capable of quantifying what that value is. And I'm going to even be able to prove it by saying, oh, by the way, this was done by an independent research based on the response of over 100 people.
Yeah, and you could even use the testimonials, I imagine, to demonstrate the gain.
Yes, you're introducing another concept in that issue of demonstrating the gain, which is one, you need to maximize the amount of financial, strategic, and personal value that you present. But two, you need to prove that value. And I found that there are only four ways that people can prove the value to make it, you know, even more tangible. The first way is to use a customer story. And we talked about, you know, stories earlier on. The second way is a demonstration. In fact, when Domino said 30 minutes or less, or it's free, when they use the word or it's free, the type of proof that they use is a demonstration. It's not a customer story. It's a demonstration, but it's a very strong demonstration. The third type of proof is data as in statistical or marketing data. And the last kind of proof, which is by far the weakest, it's when people use their vision. And you use a vision when you tell your customer, trust me, my travel blog will save you 10% on your travel expenses. Well, when you tell people trust you, it's not providing a very strong proof. So you have that continuum of proof, which starts with customer case, then demo, then data, then vision. And if you think about it, most people today, when they talk about something or they try to persuade others, they only use their vision to help people understand the value. And unfortunately, a vision is the weakest type of proof because you act your customer an act of faith in the value that they will receive. So again, if you go back to that person who is writing a blog on travel, you have to, well, can you save your audience money? Yes. How much money? Now you quantify it. And then how do you prove it? Do you only use your vision to prove it, or do you have good customer cases? Or can you claim Bill Gates, who is the reader of my blog, was able to save $500,000 last year on his travel expenses because he read my blog? So you need to work on those two axes. One axis, the value itself, financial, strategic, or personal. The other axis is the proof, the type of proof that you're using to illustrate it. But again, think about how people don't typically quantify their value and how people further than that don't even prove it. So that's what we call demonstrate the gain.
Yeah, absolutely. So to recap, that was diagnose the pain, differentiate your claim, and then demonstrate the pain and wrap all of those
around. Demonstrate the gain. Demonstrate the gain.
Demonstrate the gain. And then wrap all those around, deliver those to appeal to the primal brain, the reptilian brain.
Yes, correct.
That'll dictate the structure of your website, the structure of your product sales pages, even how you probably approach in-person sales meetings and sales calls. I think that's a really powerful framework to use going forward. So Patrick, appreciate you laying that on us here on the Side Hustle Show. Salesbrain.com is where you can find more about Patrick. The new book is The Persuasion Code. If you're into this primal brain stuff, highly recommend checking that stuff out, how to sell more, and of course, be ethical about it, but tap into those primal urges and build your business. So Patrick, again, thank you for joining me. Let's wrap this thing up with your number one tip for Side Hustle Nation.
Well, I think my number one tip is you need to move away from trying to build a rational argument for your customers to buy from you. Or even better, you need to build that rational argument which will satisfy their neocortex or their rational brain. But then once you have agreed on that, you need to find ways to create the proper emotion so that it will trigger their primal brain and it will incent them to say yes to buying from you.
Absolutely. Don't completely abandon the rational part, but make sure that you can appeal to this reptilian brain as well. So, Patrick, very cool. Thank you for joining me. We'll catch up with you soon.
Thank you, Nick.
There's no question that it takes some practice and some skill to craft a really compelling offer. And as we heard from Patrick, there's a lot to consider. There's a lot that goes into that. The good news is everything is learnable. On our sponsor, Skillshare.com, you can learn all about effective copywriting and sales and tons more and still practice just-in-time learning, which is to say, to pick up the skills you need when you need them. The on-demand online education platform has more than 20,000 classes taught by practicing experts. Join the millions of professionals and side hustlers who are leveling up their skills to advance their careers and grow their businesses. How Skillshare works is you get unlimited access to all these classes for a low monthly price. In that way, it's kind of like Netflix, but unlike Netflix, I think it'll actually help your business. Check out the extensive catalog for yourself at Skillshare.com/sidehustle. While you're there, you'll notice that Skillshare has put together a special offer for Side Hustle Show listeners, where you can try Skillshare for 2 months for just 99 cents. I think you're going to love it. Go to Skillshare.com/sidehustle to get started today. That's Skillshare.com/sidehustle for 2 months of unlimited access for just 99 cents. All right, my top three takeaways from this call with Patrick. Number one is to paint the contrast. Maybe you've heard of the blue ocean strategy, which advocates finding untapped or unserved niches in a market. And that kind of goes against a lot of what we heard on the show saying, look, you don't need to come up with some never before seen business or something totally innovative. So I think Patrick's point about contrast comes in is when you face competition, and if your idea or market is any good, there's probably always going to be competition, is how can you be different? It reminds me of Jonathan Mendonca's point in episode 287. If you can't be first, be different. There's a quote from Srini Rao, different is better than better. In my shoe business, for example, at that time, it was the only comparison shopping site just for footwear. And because of that, it was the only site that had accurate product level coupon integration, which is kind of a wordy way of saying, look, we know the industry and we found you the best deal. So you don't have to go hunting to the ends of the internet. We're going to save you time. We're going to save you money. So that's takeaway number one, paint the contrast. How can you be different? That's something that I've actually been thinking a lot about lately. Takeaway number two is to poke at the pain. A few guests have mentioned the framework of problem, agitate, solve, or you know, problem, agitate that problem, and then offer your solution for drafting sales messages. And I think there is something to that. Obviously, there's something to that. But the more you can poke at the pain, the more you can trigger that selfish primal brain to do something about it. And remember, like Patrick's Domino's example, your product or service might not be what you're really selling at all. You can put yourself in your customer's shoes and think about what they're really buying when they do business with you. Maybe it's peace of mind, maybe it's extra hours in the day, maybe it's more profit to the bottom line, maybe it's like a safe neighborhood for their kids to grow up and go to school in, or a place to call home. But you can ask questions, you can find the motivating pains, and then explain how you can turn that pain into a gain. Show what's really in it for them. Takeaway number three is to bring the emotion. What kind of stories can you weave into your business? How can you showcase the feelings of your prospects? This, I think, is a big opportunity for improvement in my own writing, which tends to be pretty matter of fact, but people really remember stories. I could be better about asking on this podcast, for example, how did it feel when you went in there to quit your job? Tell me the story of your first customer. And oftentimes when I do remember to ask something like that, you get a good story that comes out. And of course, there's always a balance to strike, but the use of story is another thing I've been thinking about, in part from this conversation with Patrick and in part from some conversations and sessions at FinCon last month. Just one example, one speaker showed a video. It was an internal video that was part of their employee training. And at first you're like, great, what's the point of this? It's just a bunch of happy pictures of their family. But then about halfway through the video, you find out that one of their daughters died. And immediately your heart just breaks. You have this immediate emotional response about what the family has been through and why they do what they do and kind of what they stand for. And this video wasn't meant to sell any product or service, but I'd bet that by sharing that story, the employees, remember that was the audience, the employees who are watching it are way more invested in their job and they feel a much deeper relationship with the family. Now, the stories and emotions that you use don't have to be tragic or heartbreaking like this, but think about how you can weave more emotion into your message, and I'll try and do the same as well. So those were my top three takeaways. Paint the contrast, poke at the pain, and then bring the emotion. What do you think? Let me know in the comments for this episode at sidehustlenation.com/Patrick. While you're there, be sure to download the free PDF highlight reel with all of Patrick's top tips from the call. That's it for me. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, let's go out there and make something happen. And I'll catch you in the next edition of The Side Hustle Show, where you'll meet a guy who is uniquely talented in helping you come up with viable business ideas and get started for free. Even if you're the person who says, I can never come up with a good idea. It's a fun one. I'll see you then. Hustle on.
Thanks for listening to The Side Hustle Show at www.sidehustlenation.com.